Beautiful morning, 20 minutes now before 10 o'clock. If you have ever toyed around with the idea of visiting Rome, our next guest has written a book that will push you over the edge and make you want to get on the next flight to Italy. It's The History of Rome in 12 Buildings, a travel companion to the hidden secrets of the Eternal City by Philip Marleg. Philip, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Paul, thank you so much. It's great to be with you.
When did you first fall in love with Rome?
I first fell in love with Rome just after my wife and I were married, just about 17 years ago. We hopped on a plane. We're poor. We're just out of college. Had very little to our name, but somehow managed to get our hands on some super cheap airfare and scrimped together what we had and flew over to Italy and spent a week or so together in the city as a young married couple. And the moment we stepped off the train station, I was just absolutely enthralled. It's a city that just the moment you're there, it invites you to learn more. It invites you to spend more time. It invites you to explore the rich fabric of its culture and history. And so it took about 30 seconds of being out in the air before I was hooked.
How has Rome maintained its sense of history in the modern age? In what I mean by that is there are so many cities with such a great sense of history, but there's a Starbucks on every corner. It, you know, it sort of loses its feel. Describe how Rome has maintained its sense of history.
Accidentally. So the history of Rome and what we think of the great antiquity and the great culture in some respects is no different than any other city, which is the present discounts the past. And there have been so many times in Rome's history when what we think of with modern sensibilities, when we think with our modern sensibilities, looking back, we have this sense of almost tragedy at their approach to their own history. You know, for example, in the late medieval, the early Renaissance, the mid Renaissance, there was a great trend towards tearing down monuments that had survived for 1,500 years, for 2,000 years, so that they could burn up the marble from the ancient temples to use as lime as a feedstock for other building projects. And it was really only until about the 1820s, 1850s, that people began to say, wait a minute, hold on, we have something that we really, really need to preserve here. And a lot of what you see as ancient in Rome is what survived or what had not yet been excavated and was only excavated after this sense of cultural appreciation had taken hold. So what we have, Rome is remarkable. It has the richest set of ancient ruins of anywhere, especially for a city of that size and magnitude. But in a lot of cases, what we have, we're lucky to have, but we should have had much more.
Was it hard to pare this list down to just 12 buildings?
Yes, hugely difficult. In fact, if the subtitle is includes the word "the hidden secrets of the Eternal City," one of the hidden secrets of the book is that I actually couldn't limit myself to 12. And every chapter starts with a main feature that main chapter that features one of the buildings, and then picks one more little place for just a little sort of anecdote or a vignette before moving on to the next. So there's a companion story to each main chapter. So there's actually 24 books covered in it, and even that was just very, very difficult. And what really surprised me the most was that the stories of the buildings can be used in different ways to tell different stories about different people at different times. I mean, some of these things have been around for 2,000 years. So building the chronology was complicated, but it was fun. It was like a jigsaw puzzle, trying to put all the pieces together in a way that told a complete picture and was cohesive. So it was enormously fun to do.
It's a great travel guide because each of these chapters, each of these buildings, you also identify local restaurants that are nearby and not just high-end restaurants, but carry-out places and places where you can just grab a quick bite to eat. So this obviously comes from somebody who's visited Rome more than once, right?
Yes, although it's amazing how much of the research I could do remotely. I said Rome was an invitation, it invites you to learn more, and I accepted that invitation. And over the past 16 or 17 years, I've done a lot of reading, and people ask me a lot, how did you research the book? And I said, I didn't really mean to. I just happened to do it by way of my personal interest. It's just the accumulated knowledge over the last decade and a half of studying it. And the thing that's really cool about Rome and Roman history is you don't have to go there to derive enjoyment from it. And I hope the book itself is it's certainly written to help people have a better trip to Rome, whether they're, you know, experts on Roman history or whether they've, you know, just learning for the first time. But I think the stories are intended to be intrinsically interesting for people who generally enjoy learning about history in its own right. So I've spent some time, not as much as you might think, given I've, written a book about it, but whether, you know, you've been before or not, whether you've been many times or not, it's really kind of written to have everyone be able to derive something from it, because it's just, it's a wonderful city, and I'm just trying to share my love of it with everyone.
Do you have a particular favorite place in Rome, or you know, I won't make you limit it to just one, but what are your, among your favorites there?
So I'll give quick stories about two. The first is the Temple of the Divine Julius Caesar. So, you know, Julius Caesar is my favorite person from history. He's just endlessly fascinating. He was charismatic. He's this great paradox. He came from the upper class of a class-obsessed society, and yet he grew up very poor. He grew up in what we would today call the slums on the outskirts of Rome, and every day he would, as a child, walk into the city proper and walk past all the wealth and into the center of power. But his connection and obligation and bond was really with sort of the everyday citizen, the rank and file, and in some respects, the dispossessed and poor and downtrodden. So even as he consolidated enormous power into his own hands, he also took care of the people in a way that it just deeply offended his fellow oligarchs. Mm-hmm. And so when he was assassinated, it was less about the lofty rhetoric of tyranny and more about sort of who should be in control, the people or, you know, the upper class of society. And the liberators, as they called themselves, the assassins, as historians tend to call them, you know, they believed they'd done this great deed, all right? Too much power in the hands of one person. But the people didn't see it that way. They saw their champion as having been deprived. So at his funeral, which was held in the Roman Forum, the citizens swelled up in anger and revolted, and at his they turned his body, which was laying in state, into a funeral pyre, and threw everything flammable onto it, and his pyre turned into a conflagration and burned down most of the Forum.
Wow.
And you can still visit that spot, like the very spot where Caesar was impromptu cremated, in the heart of the Forum, as an expression of rage, anger, and mourning from the people, is still there. And it's protected by a modern wall, and you know, a temple was built up around it and has since been ruined, but the site of the funeral pyre is still there. And you go and you'll see people have left votive offering, you know, coins and flowers. Wow. And things like that. And it's incredibly moving that this charismatic figure from over 2,000 years ago still has this pull on the minds and hearts of the people. Is really, really a very special place. So that's one.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to get a lot of momentum running downhill. I said two, but I also want to be respectful, make sure I'm not over talking. So do I have time for the second one?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. No, go ahead. Go ahead. We've got time if you've got time.
Okay. So the last little vignette in the book is covers a place called the Basilica of San Clemente. And if you're walking by it on the street, you could walk right past it. It seems so I think I read 900 churches in Rome itself. And you can kind of get church fatigue when you go to Rome.
Yeah.
And I don't personally, but I can understand if people do. But this place is extraordinary, and it is an absolute must visit, because the church itself, which is beautiful, it's sort of a early Renaissance era church, but it's because of the flights of stairs and what they reveal as you go down and down and down. You go down one floor, and now you're on the foundations of a much earlier church built in the early Middle Ages, and just right around the time of the collapse of the Western Empire. And so the old church became the foundation for the more modern one that you see at street level. So you go down one flight of stairs, and you're going down about 1,000 years in history to a time when the church was, as an institution, was really still kind of in this spiritual battle with the Roman pagan pantheon. And by the way, a lot of those superstitions exist to this day. The what we think of as Christmas is set around the Roman festival of Saturnalia. And the early church fathers moved the celebration of Christmas to the same time as this Roman Forum to get the Roman holiday to get it to stick. So you're in this church that tells a much richer story about the evolution and the history of Christianity and its battle with the Roman pagan pantheon, but it's not just there. you go down another flight of stairs and you're back in the Republican period, which is, you know, the time that Julius Caesar brought to a close. So from before Caesar, you're in an imperial mint where they mined coins. There's a pagan temple. There's a, you know, paving and streets and sewers and infrastructure all underneath this structure. So you're climbing downstairs and you're going down 2,000 years of history. And it's just fascinating because you see the whole arc of time and the cycle of history taking place in the short window, just, you know, again, a couple flights of stairs. It's immensely rewarding, but it also is such a taunt to me because it reminds me that as I walk down any street in Rome, just 30, 40, 50 feet beneath my feet could be something extraordinary just waiting to be discovered. And that's what's so magnificent about this city, is that as much as we know, we're still learning new things every day. And I sort of wonder, if we just dug, what would we find?
You know,
every footfall could be over the treasure that unlocks this next wave of knowledge about who these people were and what they did. So the Basilica of San Clemente, I think, would be my next recommendation if I had to pick a couple spots.
I mean, it has to feel like traveling through time, visiting some of these places, and really visiting the very birthplace of civilization.
Yes, I mean, the Roman Empire, you know, it's funny, we think about it a lot through its decline and fall because of Edward Gibbon's The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. That, you know, that's talking about the Western Roman Empire, in which collapsed in 476, AD 476. But it lived on in the West through Byzantium, which is now Istanbul, until that fell in 1453. And they called themselves Romans. I mean, the founding name of Constantinople was Nova Roma, New Rome. It was founded simply to be an Eastern capital on par with the Western Empire. And the, you know, Rome itself was founded, you know, semi-legendarily at 750s BC and collapsed in 1450s AD. So you have a 2,200-year run of a political institution that is the most long-lived institution in a political institution in human history. And, you know, certainly the size and scope of the empire was massive, but actually the enduring legacy. So much of say Europe's law code is based upon the Roman law code, which was consolidated and codified in the 500s. So like the courts, the way we think about law, the way we think about rights, the way we think about justice, and all of these concepts that are the foundations of our society take their origins, at least in part, because of the way that the Roman Empire spread them throughout the world. Or at least the Western world, and which would, for many people, was the known world at that particular time. So it just, you're going back to the origins of so many things that we hold dear today, and you have the great opportunity to experience that unveiled throughout the architecture and throughout the ruins and throughout the stories that brought those places to life.
Boy, fascinating history lessons here in the history of Rome in 12 Buildings by Philip Barlick. Philip, thanks so much for your time this morning. We really appreciate you joining us.
Oh, greatly appreciate it. Thanks for giving me the chance, Paul. I appreciate it. To your listeners, my sincere thanks. I hope everyone has a great day and a great week.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. Bye.